Mario sounders on the board. Did we do that at some point?
Mario?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, we've never done Mario.
I thought I had like a... I thought I had a Luigi. I meant not specifically Mario, but like Mario Brothers universe, you know? You know what I mean?
I think it would be great if we had like a, here we go.
Right. Let's go.
Let's go. Like anytime we were about to dive into just some really outlandish bullshit.
Just the top of every show. Like just now when I wanted that button and didn't have it.
Here we go.
Dude. For the record, I don't think you've been listening to this podcast. I recommended it a while ago, but the This Is Important pod.
I've never listened to that podcast.
So back when I recommended it, they did not yet have a soundboard. Blake has now gotten a soundboard and just keeps adding more and more sounders that we regularly use.
Oh.
Dude is just completely, obviously, unintentionally, has no idea we exist. But now it's going to look like I've been biting Workaholics forever, even though we did it like 4 years prior to them even having a podcast.
Hey, are we sure?
Are we sure that Blake Anderson doesn't listen to our show?
Are we sure?
No, I guess we could.
Are we hit him up. Sure?
We could find out, I guess.
I doubt it. He's just out here being like, look, we're way more famous. So as soon as we use the sounders, we have proof though. We got receipts for having used these.
We've got episodes from like 2017 where I'm doing it, but yeah, he had the Stone Cold, give me a hell yeah, on the one I was listening to today.
Really?
Yeah, man, there's a bunch of them. It's bad news. It's good news. He has good taste. He's right. They're funny, but it looks bad for us.
No, it looks bad for him, man. That's what it looks bad for.
From this sorry ass show? Come on, man. Do better.
I do better, bro. Aren't you supposed to be like a writer or something? Be creative, yeah. Bro.
Y'all are actual comedians.
What the fuck is that, kid?
We just fell into being sort of kind of funny on the internet.
I'm out here mixing drinks after I hit record for some reason instead of before.
I'm pretty proud of you for putting your cup and your pouring can behind your microphone so as to you should have foleyed your pour, man. It would have been perfect.
Well, there'll be another one later. I decided I'm going to drink during this episode. I haven't done it in a long time. It could be fun.
All right. Game on. Right. Game on.
Ryan, Hi, everybody.
It's rough start. It's the Sweary Boys. No, we're good. It's the Sweary Boys. That's Spencer. I'm Ryan. This is the What If Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. It's nice to see you or hear you or be heard. And we are going to do her indeed. I'm all right, man.
I put ice cubes in my glass too. Just fucking rookie moves on rookie moves over here.
Clinking. We can both clink right into our
clanking and drinking, bro.
Mine's clinking just barely because I have one big cube in mine.
Nice. You got the orb? The orb cube?
Orb is all. No.
Yeah.
You
seem like a guy that might keep some fancy ice on deck. I can see that.
I do have big square cubes, but not big round cubes.
Oh, right.
I definitely want to get... what?
Well, I'm just trying to picture what do you put the big square cubes in? Not too many glasses can accommodate a large literal cube.
Like they're the size that you can drop one in a pint glass and it goes into the pint glass but doesn't get to the bottom of the pint glass.
Okay.
And if your rocks glass is big enough, it for sure goes into the bottom of that.
Like it would fit in one of these joints that I'm drinking out of?
It would absolutely fit in one of those joints.
Low ball? Is that what that's called?
It is called a low ball.
Hell yeah. Fucking crushing it.
Ask your former bartender what kind of glassware this is.
Yeah.
I wasn't a real bartender. I was like a fake stand-in bartender, man. It was...
What does that mean?
I mean, it means I worked at a restaurant and sometimes I poured drinks behind the bar, but if someone had come in and been like... Hey, I need a Manhattan and, you know, bop, bop, bop. Like, I would have had some struggle bus time.
Manhattan's easy, bro.
It is. That's a bad example. But, like I could pour the hell out of a beer and I can, like, I can do some, like, pretty common mixed drinks.
Does it go, do you pull it towards you or do you push the tap away from you?
Bro, you'd be surprised how many people, like, if you weren't behind the bar and they were mad impatient and they tried to pour their own beer and just foamed a glass, like, instantly. A lot of people don't know how to do it.
But
a lot
they're
of
drunks.
You cats. What's that?
Yeah, they're drunk, though. I mean, they got a distinct disadvantage.
No. I'm saying, like, because the bartender would be the one who poured the beers for the servers to, like, take them out to their tables.
Oh. I was like, if someone's reaching over the bar to pour their own drinks, they are fucking
mistakes.
Hammered
yeah.
drunk.
No, yes, they
I
are
wouldn't
making
expect
mistakes.
Them to be doing anything correctly.
No. I'm saying sometimes servers who are not trained behind a bar would be like, I'm going to pour the beers for my own table to make this process go faster. And then they would just fuck it up terribly and, like, foam half their glass. And
Got it.
It was a mess.
And then they were shamed.
And then you as bartender just threw that glass full of liquid at them as punishment.
Rude.
I'm just kidding. I never did that.
Yeah, I never worked in bars or restaurants. Probably should have. I'd be horrible at it.
I was going to say, I feel like everyone should, and I feel like you'd be really bad at it. And I say that with all the love in my heart.
I 100% agree on both of those statements.
It feels like you know how some countries have mandated service where, like, everybody does a year of military service or 2 years of military service after high school or whatever.
Those countries would not be for me.
I feel like we should do that, but your year or two of military service in this country should be you have to work in the service industry for, like, a year or two.
Sure. I feel like I got a similar experience, though, in education, working in education.
Sure.
Like, especially lower levels of education, if you're like a paraprofessional or a teaching assistant, something like that.
Yeah.
It's basically a service job, except you get paid less and all of your clients are, like, children.
Sure. See, okay, but the main difference...
You can't be mean to them under any circumstances.
You can't be mean to them, but also, like, your wage... See, the thing about the service industry is that your wage for the day is determined by how people decide to tip you, you know?
So I've heard, yeah.
And I feel like the main difference there is that as long as, like... you keep your job by the end of the day, you get a dependable day's wage every day in education. Whereas, like, in service.
Define dependable.
Okay. Fair point.
It is consistent.
I saw your face.
It's
now I was like, touche.
Low.
but there'll never be a day where, like, you get five tables of your nine tables for the whole afternoon and people are just horrible assholes and you make like $13.
Counterpoint. If as a server you get bit, you've had a really bad day.
That's true. As a teacher in
working with, like, elementary EBD kids for $13 an hour, being bit at 6:30 in the morning for $13 an hour, I feel like it gets you to the same point of accepting that, like, the world is a terrible place.
And you're gonna need to, like, be nice to people because it's terrible for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or if you're me, just, like, at that moment, decide that you just never want to have a real job. None of these jobs could possibly be worth it based on your education and what you're actually qualified for, which is, like, almost nothing. Any job that I'm qualified for fucking sucks. Man, it's just true.
That delivery just really killed me. That was real good. Which is almost nothing.
I mean, now, after taking a few years off, it probably is nothing. I'd have a hard time even getting a teaching job now, I bet. Well, maybe not right now specifically.
I bet you'd have one in 48 hours if you wanted one right now. But
yeah, I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, I could get, like, real fat and get a teaching job and get way closer to getting a vaccine.
I mean,
I did the little, like, Minnesota State Health Department questionnaire thing the other day.
Sure.
and answered no to every single question, which I'm assuming puts me dead last on their list of people to vaccinate.
Oh, we've talked about this before, man. You and I are healthy 30 somethings. We work from our houses. Yeah. We're not getting vaccinated until like fucking November.
I mean, we'll get vaccinated when everyone can get vaccinated, which, you know, hopefully is like July or something. We'll see.
Here's hoping.
But anyway, I was like, I bet there are jobs that I'm qualified for on the Minneapolis Public Schools website right now. I bet I could eat real good for 2 weeks and be technically obese.
Yes, I'm an obese teacher, and I'm going to need a vaccine in my arm, please. Right.
I could arrange both those things within 2 weeks, probably.
But then are you just like the women who dressed up as grannies in Florida to try to trick a vaccination site into vaccinating them?
No, I got to deal with the consequences of my actions as now actually being a fat teacher. I'm not tricking anybody. I've actually become that.
That's not a costume. But then you would just lose the weight and quit the job.
Well, sure, but for a while, I would be a fat guy getting paid a couple bucks to hang out with kids.
I'm having a really good mental time imagining you, Spencer Worth Davis, like waiting a table. just like a thing that I'm not exaggerating, I've literally done probably close to 1,000, if not a couple thousand times in my life. And I'm just going through watching you do that. And it wouldn't work.
I would be really good at it like 70% of the time. And I would be absolutely like on the spot fireable the other 30% of the time.
That's 100% correct, because as soon as someone looked at you sideways, you'd be like, I don't know. You're getting your own shit. Fuck you. I don't give a fuck.
There's a restaurant across the street. Go fucking try over there.
Go be a dick over there. Goodbye.
Dog, it's $10. Who cares? You weren't going to tip me anyway. Like, get the fuck out of here.
And they'd be like, well, sorry, you can't work here now that you did that thing.
I feel like in the right situation, like, I could bartend at like a dive bar where that shit is like part of the shtick, you know, but I would just mean it.
I don't think at a lot of dive bars, it's not part of the shtick. It's just part of the culture. It's just like,
shtick is the wrong word. Part of the, like, you know, the expectation, I guess.
It's like, we're not buddy buddy here. And if you ask for something shittily, you're gonna get shittily responded to, and that's right on you.
Right. Like, I could have worked like well, the problem is I also hate all those places. But like, you know, one of those, huh?
Dive bars?
Well, I was gonna start naming some Minneapolis ones, and I was like, oh, I don't like that place. That place is racist. Usually those places where people are all dicks, it's because they're dicks.
Yeah, there's that.
Anyway.
Any hoot nanny.
I'll keep being dicks to no one in particular on the internet, and people pay me for that instead.
Sounds like
I'll make my own drinks at home.
I'll make my own. I serve myself. I overserve myself.
Indeed.
Oh, fuck, bud. What's bringing you joy this week?
Oh, this is an update for you and for the Patreon listeners.
Yeah, but see, do you have to tell the whole story now? Because I thought about asking you about it, but I feel like you got to either tell the whole story.
I mean, it's a short, I can summarize the story in 7 words. The summary of the story is there was a squirrel in my house.
What has brought me joy
is that there is no longer a squirrel in my house. We got his little fuzzy ass, and he's been returned back to the wilderness.
Okay, but I also feel like there is so much context that is missing from there was a squirrel in my house, because that could mean some really insane things.
Yeah, not like in the living space of my house.
Not so loose like Christmas Vacation in the Christmas tree. Loose.
I never saw him. I only heard him. Them. I shouldn't assume that squirrels are men. I mean, some. Well, I guess none of them are. Some squirrels are male. No squirrels are men.
There's a man in my attic. He has a fuzzy tail. He's about 12 inches tall. I'm sorry, sir. You're talking about us.
That's the phone call I made on Friday morning. He's real little. I mean, it's not a very big space he's in.
Yes, excuse me. There is a small, furry gray man in my house. What? Yes, he has a very fuzzy tail. Plumage. Sorry, are you talking about a squirrel? Yes, a man. A man squirrel.
So the second floor of my house is, it used to be an attic, and then they, you know, finished it and like busted out the sides and whatever. So it's like a story and a half situation. And so the walls of our upstairs now go to like, you know, there's only like 8 inches or something between the ceiling and the roof.
Right, right.
And at the very top of my house, there's this little triangle of unfinished space and then a vent at either end of the house for that warm air to escape. And after living here for 10 years, on Thursday afternoon, a squirrel decided to chew their way through that little vent, which is metal, by the way, turns out. Chomped through a metal vent just to climb into this little, like, I mean, it's honestly, it's probably like maybe a foot across by like less than a foot high. And it is like a tube that runs the length of my house. And this dude was just going ham, running back and forth directly above my bed in the ceiling of my house on Thursday. So I was upstairs taking a shower and heard, like, honestly, a foot and a half from my head, something scuttering around. Anyway. They're gone.
You never want to hear it.
What has brought me joy after sleeping on my couch for 2 nights, because hearing a squirrel running laps 6 inches above your head is just not a condition that I can sleep in.
Mm-mm.
The little bastard is gone. He's safe. Our house is now occupied only by humans and golden doodles again. And
sir,
all is well.
Arrest that man. I'm sorry, which man? The small one. Sorry, are you talking about? Hey, there's an intruder. Spencer dials 911. There's an intruder in my home.
First of all, I would never call the cops, even on a squirrel.
Not even on a squirrel.
Anyway, that's what I got. My house is my house again.
God
humans
bless.
Humans and dogs only.
God bless it. I'm glad you've reduced the number of living creatures to an acceptable amount.
Down to 3 creatures, 2 species. Everything is as it should be.
Hell yeah.
What's bringing you joy, buddy?
My joy this week is that it's literally 70 degrees warmer than it was 5 days ago.
Did it really get to negative 30?
The feels like temperature was...
Oh, well, that's not literal then.
I mean, okay, it literally feels 70 degrees warmer outside than it felt 5 days ago.
Sure.
Which is just a vast improvement. And I went for a walk yesterday in a hoodie and a vest and didn't freeze. And that brought me joy to feel like I am not restricted to the walls in my house, or I will literally die in like 15 minutes.
Yeah, I just didn't take the dog for a walk for like 9 days in a row.
We took the dog for a walk yesterday. Mooka, like, first of all, pulled us like a sled dog for an entire hour's worth of a walk because she was so like, haha, everything is mine. The world is mine. I'm back. And then we got back into the yard and she decided she wanted to play fetch with a ball for another like legitimately 45 minutes. Like she had 2 weeks worth of husky energy. I mean, she had done things too. It's not like we did nothing with her, but we just were not walking her on And if any of y'all have huskies, you know husky energy is
its this own is thing, fucking nuts right here.
They're little nutter butters. They are.
Yeah, man. Marcy got two walks today because it's a big boy and it's warm out.
Let's go. It also, unfortunately, is that temperature now where the only upside was when I let my dog out in the yard when it's real cold out, she would poop and pee and bring her ass back inside. Bang, bang, bang.
Now she just wants to hang out.
Now it's 35 degrees, which by many stretches is still pretty fucking cold. And she's like, oh, no, no, no. I live out here now. Like, you're going to have to come get me to bring me in the house if I'm ever coming back in the house.
Marcy fell asleep in the yard this afternoon.
Perfect.
It's above freezing? Yeah, I can sleep out here. This is good.
Was he a literal puddle afterwards?
No, but because our sidewalk is like cleared and he was laying on the sidewalk.
Got it. Got it. Yeah. Got it. Our house is our yard is a big sloppy mess right now.
All right, buddy. I got a topic for us today, but before that, I found something just outstanding right before we started recording that I need to share with you.
Let's do it.
You're familiar with Skinwalker Ranch?
I am.
The paranormal hotspot in Utah that we've discussed in the past here on this show.
I would also say ad nauseum.
Are you? Yeah, maybe too much, honestly. Are you familiar with the current owner of Skinwalker Ranch, Brandon Fugel?
I don't. I feel like we've talked about the ownership transition, but that does not ring a bell.
Okay.
Have we talked about him?
It may have been more on the Patreon when I was watching that just terrible but endlessly entertaining Skinwalker Ranch History Channel show last year.
Sure.
I don't know how much that bled over to here, but this Utah businessman guy named Brandon Fugel bought the ranch a couple years ago, I think from Robert Bigelow, or maybe there was one other owner in between.
Yep.
Are you familiar with Post Malone of Crocs fame?
Bro, if you tell me Post Malone bought Skinwalker Ranch, we're about to...
No, but close.
Oh, sweet.
He visited yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And Brandon Fugel posted three hilarious photos of the two of them together.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm gonna describe the three photos to you in the order that they appear on Brandon Fugel's Twitter account. The first one, they're inside the like Skinwalker Ranch war room, which is it's like a little walk-in closet that has three TV screens and some computers where they can monitor like the security cameras and shit around the ranch.
Okay.
Post Malone is wearing all black. He's got like black cargo pants on and a big black parka. He's giving the peace sign with his left hand. His right hand, sure, he can't see. And he has just a giant gun strapped to his chest.
Oh my God.
Some sort of very large rifle that goes from like his nipple down to past his knees. I don't know anything about guns, but that boy is big.
Okay.
Brandon Fugel is standing next to him, giving him the side hug. Their faces are about 6 inches apart. And with his right hand, Brandon's flashing the hang loose sign. He's banging hang loose on the camera.
I'm pulling these up so that I can have the wow. Okay.
Also, they are indoors, maskless. Their faces are almost touching.
Whoa, bro!
But, you know, Utah. Photo number two. They're wearing the same thing, except now you can see their whole bodies. Brandon Fugel is dressed like the fucking priest from The Exorcist. He is wearing a full-length black coat, a black turtleneck, black pants, and then some hilarious, like, maroon sneakers of some kind. They look like Jordan 21s or some shit.
He's got a very...
They look like what Michael Jordan wore when he played for the Wizards.
Oh, my God. He's got a very Matrix vibe going on.
But also, he may dunk on you.
Yeah, I guess there's that. Yeah.
They're standing, or Post Malone is sitting on a chair and Brandon's standing with his hand on his back. Post still has the same just obnoxiously large rifle in front of him. Because you're going to shoot the ghosts or skinwalkers or Bigfoots or whatever is out there.
I mean, look, if by some chance a bison or steer or whatever it was randomly transports itself into your space.
Right. You're gonna want to
shoot it. I mean,
I don't think you do. I don't think that'd be necessary.
I mean, if Bigfoot
comes out of a portal, maybe. Maybe you gotta give him a quick pap pap just to show him what's up, but
a quick pap pap.
seems a little aggressive. Also, I don't know why Brandon is like, it's like a kid posing for a photo with his dad. Like, I don't know why he has his hand on his shoulder like that. Why one of them is standing?
They're inside
this weird abandoned building that's falling apart.
There's a very strange, I'm getting like a weird militia vibe from these two. Like we're gonna hunt the earth when things go south.
It's like if there were an outreach program for priests to rehabilitate child soldiers, but in Eastern Europe. That appears to be what's happening in this photo.
Very, very, maybe really well done.
Maybe my favorite part of the photo is that on the windowsill, Post Malone clearly has a Bud Light in a koozie.
Bro, I mean, I don't think he goes anywhere without one as far as I'm able to tell.
Gotta rep the team even on
God, Skinwalker I want to drink Ranch. A fucking Bud Light with Post Malone really bad.
Oof. And then in the last one, they're standing, it looks like, outside of this abandoned building thing, Homestead 2 or whatever the fuck they call it. Post is giving the peace sign. Brandon is giving some weird like thumb out peace sign. I don't know what that sign is.
The number 3.
And Post has his tactical pants are more clearly in view this time.
Oh, very tactical. Lot of pockets. I'd say too many.
He's got the reinforced knees on those joints.
Definitely knee pad situation.
Gonna be doing a lot of kneeling when those haunted UFOs show up.
I mean, he's just preparing for like if he's got to run, you know, he might.
He has a walkie-talkie strapped to his shoulder. Like, what does he think he's doing out there?
I did see that. Part of me wanted to know, like, do you get assigned a walkie-talkie and a big gun by the people who run Skinwalker Ranch as a way to be like, listen.
He's with the guy who owns Skinwalker Ranch, though, who doesn't have a walkie-talkie strapped to him. Who is Post talking to?
I don't know. Maybe he's got a fucking... Maybe it's Brandon Fugle's army. I don't know.
That Brandon does not need to communicate with. They've got the telepathic link up.
He's sending him out there. He's like, you go explore. Go explore my land.
It's really just brilliant, man. There's a full write-up courtesy of KUTV that just, it has all the photos, but also an interview with Brandon Fugle.
This is all a good description, and we'll link to the photos so you guys can check this out. But do we have the context for like why this happened, or do you just discover this like right before we hopped on?
I discovered this like while I was waiting for you to log into this Zoom call. But
got it.
This 2TV article says Fugle says Post is a paranormal enthusiast who reached out to him about touring the ranch. It turns out the two had friends in common and have since become friends.
Okay.
Quote from Brandon Fugle, who apparently was interviewed for this article. Post Malone and I were introduced through mutual friends and business associates and became friends as he is extremely interested in the paranormal with the dream to visit the ranch. Fugle tells 2 News that Post was specifically interested in the scientific technology and equipment that scientists use at the ranch. Post also helped out with some investigations while he was at the ranch.
Oh, let's go. That's what I'm talking about. He got given guns and equipment.
I guess. Apparently, Post Malone also spends some of his time in Utah and owns a home there.
He said, hey, Post, shoot that mountain and see what happens.
If Nothing. You see a Bigfoot coming out of a portal, kneel down and shoot the bastard. Your knees will be just fine.
Hey, Post, start chanting these words into that walkie-talkie and listen. See what comes back.
Yeah, and then there's just some, oh, shit. Big reveal here, buddy.
Uh-oh.
The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch Season 2 is scheduled to launch the first week of May with 10 new episodes.
You know they were filming an episode. Dude, there's no way they were not filming an episode with Post as a guest on Skinwalker.
First, Robbie Williams shows up in that Jeremy Corbell documentary about Skinwalker Ranch. Brandon Fugel has to one-up him and get Post Malone on his shit.
See, and now the fucking giant unnecessary gun and tactical pants and walkie-talkie makes way more sense.
Because it looks cool on camera?
Because they're like, oh, this shit's serious, okay? The exploration we're doing here is serious. So what would make that look serious? A visible walkie-talkie, okay?
And I'm a businessman, but I also need to look serious, so black turtleneck it is. Black turtleneck and some Jordan 21s. That's my look today.
Hey, but listen, the terrain out here is tough, so I'm gonna need you to shoot me from the knees up only, and I'm gonna be wearing my hoop shoes to be able to navigate down. I'm not trying to roll an ankle while we're shooting this episode, okay?
If anyone needs to be exercised while we're filming, I've got it covered.
Holler at your boy. Hey, look, either I'm gonna exercise him or Post is gonna shoot him in the face. So we'll solve plan that A, problem one way or the other.
All right. To our real topic, half an hour into this episode.
Bum, bum, bum. What you got? What you got?
I've got the Kryptos sculpture in Langley, Virginia.
Oh.
You familiar? Okay.
I'm not.
Sick. I wasn't either. There is a sculpture by Jim Sanborn on the CIA campus in Langley, Virginia that was erected on November 3rd, 1990.
Okay.
And it's in this courtyard area outside of the CIA cafeteria.
Okay.
It's 12 feet tall and about 20 feet long, and it's made, the main section of it is four copper plates that are then surrounded by some quartz, granite, petrified wood, and a little, like, moat, almost. There's, like, water that is below the ground filtered around the sculpture. The copper plates have a total of 865 letters, like, stamped out of them. So they're, the shapes of the letters are cut out of the copper plate.
Okay.
And each plate, there are four of them, holds 1/4 of an encrypted riddle. So the letters look like just random letters. If I were to read the first plate to you, it says EMUFPHZLRFAXYUSDJKLZD, so on and so forth.
Okay.
So the whole thing is a cipher.
Interesting.
That was encrypted by the sculptor Jim Sanborn. So far, three out of the four have been solved, and the fourth one has not. In the now 30, coming up on 31 years that this has been on the CIA campus of all places.
Three out of the four plates have been solved, as in, like, the riddle of those three is something that you can, like, read now?
So each... Yes. So each one of the four quadrants is a separate, like, statement that has been encrypted in a different way.
Got it.
And if you combine all four, you get a solution to this riddle, mystery, whatever it is.
Interesting.
So the first three were solved, well, twice independently, because the two parties were not in communication with each other. David Stein, who worked at the CIA, he was a CIA analyst, solved the first three in 1998. and the CIA formed like informal task forces basically to try and solve these just for the hell of it on their lunch breaks and after work and shit.
Oh, got it. So just, do we know how the CIA acquired it?
They commissioned a sculpture and this is what the dude built.
I fuck with the vision.
He was in communication with the director of the CIA at the time. So there are three people who know the actual solution to it. The sculptor, Jim Sanborn. William Webster was the CIA director at the time. And then when he retired, he passed the solution on to the current CIA director, who is... I don't remember his name.
I don't either, and I think it changed not that long ago, too.
Jim Sanborn, the sculptor, and the CIA directors from 1990 until now, in theory, know the solution to this thing.
Huh.
However, Sanborn said in an interview, quote, "I wasn't completely truthful with the man, and I'm sure he realizes that. I mean, that's part of the tradecraft, isn't it? Deception is everywhere. I definitely didn't give him the last section, which has never been deciphered." So Sanborn has said, like, I gave him a solution, but also I lied to him, and that's not really the solution.
Okay, so this guy's basically created a riddle that has been, partially solved, but he's not being fully forthright about whether it actually has been solved, or is he saying...
No, so the fourth part has definitely not been solved. The first three have. The problem is...
Oh, he's saying I'm the only one who actually knows because someone thinks they know the fourth part, but I didn't even tell them the right fourth part.
So he when he built the sculpture, gave the key basically to the CIA director at the time, but then later said, actually, I didn't give him the right key. I'm the only person who knows the real solve for this thing.
Got it.
Jim Sanborn runs a website where for $50, he will evaluate your solution to see if it's correct.
Oh, we are in the wrong business, bro.
Right?
Oh, also, my God, we're in the wrong business.
Fam, he got paid $250,000 for the sculpture in the first place. And now
just collects $50 paychecks every probably once a day with someone trying to solve it?
It's got to take, you know, a few minutes at least to, like, read through somebody's solution to it. But also, $50 for... A lot of them you're probably tossing in 10 seconds, being like, no, that's obviously not, that's not it. Right? You could do 100 of those in a day if you want to.
We talked about this with the one guy who does the random like treasure hunt puzzles and you like pay to get the clues for the treasure hunt or whatever.
Yeah.
That's like sort of what this guy did, except for some reason he just decided there's no prize.
Well, I don't think he intended it that way though. I think he... He thought it would be solved much sooner, especially being on, like, you have everyone who works at the CIA looking at this thing every day while they're eating lunch.
And I would imagine you said the first three panels were solved in 1998.
Publicly in 1998, the NSA actually solved it first, but didn't tell anybody.
Damn, bro.
That's just their trot, being all secretive and shit.
Damn.
That's but yeah, it was solved multiple times independently, or the first three were solved multiple times independently within the first 5 to 10 years. But this fourth one has been chilling for 30 years and no one's been able to figure it out. So the first three, let me give you the deciphered versions of the first three. The first section reads, after being deciphered, "Between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion."
Oh, that's it?
That's section one out of four.
Say it one more time.
"Between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion."
Got it. I guess I thought it would be a lot more than that because you said the whole thing has 825 characters. So if you split that into four.
Two and three are much longer.
Got it.
Okay, section two, after being deciphered, reads, "It was totally invisible. How is that possible? They used the Earth's magnetic field. The information was gathered and transmitted underground to an unknown location. Does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere. Who knows the exact location? Only WW, this was his last message. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north. 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. Layer 2.
Yo, that goes hard. Fuck with it.
So WW is the...
Woodrow Wilson.
No, it's the dude who was in charge of the CIA at the time, who I just said, William Webster. And then the degrees, minutes, seconds are latitude and longitude, which equate to somewhere in, well, let's just zoom in. It's somewhere on the CIA campus.
Oh.
Yeah. And in subsequent interviews, Sanborn has said that you need to be physically on the grounds of the CIA to solve this riddle.
Oh, interesting. So he's using the actual like geometry of the place or something.
Maybe. I mean, he talks about something being buried. So who knows? It's okay. It's a point 174 feet southeast of the sculpture. So it's like very close to the actual sculpture.
Is this a treasure hunt or is it just a cipher?
We don't know yet because no one's figured out part four.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, and Sanborn has never said like what this actually is, if anything.
But like there could be a gold at the end of the rainbow, but no one would know.
Not yet, at least, yeah. So the first two were encoded in the encrypted in the same way using this method where you take, I don't fully understand it, but it involves a keyword and then you're using that word repeated over and over and over again in a chart, like a matrix basically.
Yeah.
And you find like where certain letters intersect. I'm just not smart enough to understand this shit, but it's a method of encryption that uses a specific keyword.
Got it.
So the first, it's called,
I was going to say there's a name for it and I can't think of what it is.
It's a French word that I don't know how to pronounce. You ready?
Yes.
V-I-G-E-N-E-R-E. Vigenere? I don't fucking know.
That's not the word I was thinking of, so never mind. But, I mean, I believe you.
It's named after a French guy, and it uses a keyword.
Tight.
So the first two use the same method of encryption, which is like a relatively well-known encryption method. Passage three, after being decrypted, says, or deciphered? Deciphered. Slowly, desperately, slowly the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in the hot air escaping from the chamber. Caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist. Can you see anything? Which is a quote from Howard Carter's account of opening the tomb of Tutankhamun.
Whoa.
From the 1923 book, The Tomb of Tutankhamun.
Interesting. I actually wondered that with the second panel when you read it, because it sounded like a direct like quote or reference or acknowledgement of something.
Right. There's there's very little punctuation in these too, that he uses four question marks in the whole thing, but there's no other punctuation. So it's a little, I probably read that quote somewhat awkwardly because it's just all run together.
Hmm.
So those are the first three. We have something about shading and light and illusion. Also, illusion is intentionally misspelled. It's I-Q-L-U-S-I-O-N. Don't know why.
Weird.
And then we have the coordinates and the something being buried in the Earth's magnetic field. And then we have a quote about opening the tomb of King Tut. Those are the first three.
Shit went bad real quick.
I haven't been pressing enough buttons because I'm drunk and leading an episode about encryption. Sorry.
Who the fuck knows?
This is why we gotta find a way to digitize it so I can click the buttons.
We need to just hire a full-time button pusher.
What a gig.
I'll hit up Blake's agent, see if he's busy on non This Is Important podcast days.
Just shout random obscenities and push random buttons. That's all you gotta do.
Hey. You're famous. We'll give you $0 to push buttons and make jokes.
No, we'll give you like $13 an episode. it's an olive branch to show you we care more than asking for something for free. It's not, it's not going to, change your lifestyle, but
we also know you're listening. So
Blake, hi at whatifpodcast.com or 612-246-4614. We know you like our sounders, and that's okay. Hey, look, it's okay. We like them too, and so do all our listeners.
Oh, man, we need fucking help, buddy.
All right, so passage four, the unsolved passage. Four times, I think. Sanborn has given clues about this last passage because no one has been able to solve it for 30 years.
Oh.
In 2010... he said that, also the fourth one, part of the reason it's so hard to solve is, twofold. It doesn't use the same encryption method as the first three. And it's significantly shorter. It's only 97 characters total.
Okay.
Which actually makes it harder to decipher because letters repeat less often.
Sure, you have less context to compare things against to be able to find patterns.
Right.
Makes sense.
Okay, so in 2010, Sanborn said that the 64th through 69th letters in the passage, which are NYPVTT, after being decrypted, become Berlin, like the city in Germany.
Oh.
So we know how to decrypt, or... not how to, but what those six letters decrypt to. And we know that Berlin is somehow involved in the clue.
Interesting.
4 years later, in an interview with the New York Times, Sanborn said that the 70th through 74th letters, so immediately after Berlin, the letters MZFPK become clock after decryption.
Okay.
So we have letters 64 through 74 are Berlin clock. Also noteworthy that K somehow decrypts to K in this cipher.
Right.
So somehow I know nothing about encryption or ciphers or anything. I'm not sure how it works that a letter could decrypt to itself.
Well, depending on what it's referencing, there could be a cipher key somewhere where the corresponding letters could be the same letter, but could also be other letters.
Like if you have a keyword or something?
Yeah, like if it references something else.
Yeah, or like I guess the key could be a page of a book or something.
Right.
In that same interview in 2014, Sanborn said that in order to solve passage four, you need to delve into that particular clock. So he's saying there's something about a specific clock in Berlin that you need to know in order to solve this fourth section. Which Wikipedia says is presumably the Berlin clock, because it says Berlin clock. Although there are apparently some other famous clocks in Berlin.
Germans are known for their watchmaking. Matchmaking.
The Germans are just constantly dating each other.
Watchmaker, watchmaker, make me a watch.
I thought that was the Swiss. Germans are good at making watches?
Yeah, aren't there a couple famous German watch companies?
Couldn't tell you. They make good microphones. That's about all I know.
I think there's at least a couple.
Okay, so neither of those were enough to solve it, apparently.
Yeah.
And about this time last year, he did another interview with the New York Times, he being Sanborn, and said that letters 26 through 34 in the cipher, which are QQPRNGKSS, are the word northeast.
I mean, there's only 96 letters in this fourth piece. We're at like,
and we've got three words. Yeah, right. And he said in August of last year that letters 22 through 25, which are FLRV in the sculpture, become east. So we have, let's see, northeast is 8 letters, 12, 13. Yeah, we have 19 of the 97 letters. And
so, yeah.
And no one's been able to solve it still.
We're at a quarter of it almost. So interesting. I always
it's almost
feel
exactly
like,
a fifth, but yes.
What's that?
It's almost exactly a fifth, but close enough.
So the thing that I'm always like tripped out about when these things happen is I'm like, this guy with all the shit in his brain is just banking on the fact that, like, I mean, because I have to imagine you want it solved, right? Like, there would be some sort of satisfaction, even if it's not public, like, as the guy who made it, you probably want to see this completed in your lifetime. And you're, like, just banking on the fact that you're not going to fucking up and kick the bucket randomly and go to your grave with all of the context that might be needed for this thing to ever be fully understood. That just seems dice.
He said that he didn't anticipate it taking this long to solve. Also, to your point, he's 74 years old now, Sanborn is.
So, you know, my guy's got a decade or so. And
so in a New York Times article from, this was the January 2020 article in which he gave one of these clues, he said, quote, "The ongoing process is exhausting. It's not something I thought I'd be doing 30 years on."
You know what, bro? It makes sense then that as a 74-year-old, you got to charge $50 because it's probably like a barrier to entry.
Right.
For people who are actually serious and want this dude's attention to be like, yo, I think I might have something here. Otherwise, you just get 800 emails fired off to you every single day. Go, is this it? Is this it? Is this it? Is this
and
it?
He's and literally then, the only person with the solution, according to him.
So for
you
him
can't
to
even actually, delegate it anywhere.
Right. So for him to be able to verify whether it actually has been solved or not, he's got to be the one to actually look at it.
He physically has to look at every single proposed solution. Yeah.
But he can't just indulge every moron in the universe's like, does it mean this? Does it mean that? Does it mean this? Does it mean that?
So, he sort of answered that question you just asked in this New York Times article.
Yeah.
He said, quote, "For the past few years, I've been trying to figure out how to have this, quote, system survive my death, and it has not been easy." He's decided that if the code is not broken when he dies, the secret will be put up for auction.
Whoa, dude.
Quote, "I do realize that the value of Kryptos is unknown, and perhaps this concept will bear little fruit. but he said the buyer could reveal the secret or perpetuate the mystery and maintain the system for submissions. He said the money raised would go to funding climate science.
Okay.
So he's going to, he plans to, I mean, I don't know. He said if the code is not broken when he dies, the secret will be put up to auction. You can't auction something after you die. So I don't know if he has like it sealed somewhere and someone in place to auction it off or what the deal is there. But
my guess would be it's in, he's written in some sort of will and testament a solution to it, or he's written out what the actual like decryption cipher is.
His lawyer or something has in a safety deposit box or
an envelope
fireproof that is safe like, somewhere. Yeah.
Right. Here's the end of Kryptos and you can sell this to someone or give this to someone or whatever.
So what's interesting to me is like, obviously the main driving force here is just the thrill of solving the mystery.
Right. Right.
But it's been implied that like there might be something of value involved here.
It seems like, I mean, just to get to like the language piece, there's a lot of like finding and coordinates and like it feels very treasure hunty.
Yeah.
Except if you're Sanborn, is it not in your interest to call attention to that truth in some capacity with your clues to drive further attention?
Well, I mean, he's admitted that like this has not gone the way he thought it was going to go. So like maybe he, if I were a sculptor who's not like a trained code breaker or cryptographer or whatever the word is, I might assume that the hardest thing I can come up with is not going to be that difficult for the entirety of the CIA.
And the NSA, right? Apparently. And
right.
Yeah, like every government agency.
You have the people who are literally the best in the country, if not the world, at this stuff, staring at this thing every day at work. And yeah, like with the ability to pool their knowledge. It's not just like one at a time. Like the entire CIA could work together on this if they wanted to. And at times, like big chunks of them have.
He's probably going like, damn, did I make a bad here? Did I like screw this up? Did I get one letter off and now this is an unsolvable cipher?
Well, and some people have, there's a guy, Carl Wang, who is a, I forget what his qualifications are, but he's solved the first three and has been working on the fourth one.
Yep.
He described it as the first two parts are straightforward enough that nearly anyone with a simple education in cryptography can solve them. The third is much more advanced. And the fourth is borderline impossible.
I love it, bro. I fucking love it so much. I love being like, yeah, fuck you. Fuck you. I made a fuck you cipher.
Well, I mean, there are ways to encrypt something that are like impossible to solve, right? Or with like, if you encrypt something to one key that someone doesn't have access to, then it would be unsolvable, correct?
Which is another thing I was thinking about, the whole, like, one of the things you've done by making it potentially reliant on Langley is you've reduced your number of participants specifically to the number of people who go to Langley or are allowed to go to Langley to participate in your cipher.
I think there's a distinction, though, because he's not saying you need to be physically present to decipher the text. He's saying to solve the riddle of the four pieces combined, you need to be on site. Because in this Times article, Sanborn said, quote, the phrase itself is a riddle. It's going to lead to something else. It's not going to be finished when it's decoded. So I think what he's saying is, once you have all four pieces, to then solve whatever riddle those four pieces together tell, you need to be actually on site in Langley.
Sure.
But if you just have the text of the four pieces, you should be able to decipher them. You might not be able to act on what they say, but you should be able to like actually have the text.
Got it. So, well, the point is different, but the point does still sort of stand that the amount of people who could like fully bring this thing to fruition is technically limited by their need to be President Langley.
Sure. Yeah.
Like to your point, the decoding could be universal, but the actual, like, whatever you want to call it, the completion of the riddle requires there be a pretty small amount of people who can actually get you there.
I would guess that's likely a technicality, though.
Sure.
Like, I would assume if I presented the correct solution to Sanborn and he emails me back and says, yes, that's it, and I go to the CIA and say, hey, here's this email from the guy who made your sculpture saying that I solved it. Can I come look around for 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, who knows? Maybe they say no, but like,
yeah.
And especially now, they probably for sure say no, but
yeah.
If you present them the actual solution, they would probably let you see it through, I would guess.
It also,
depends on what it says, I suppose.
Depending on what it says and depending on how invasive the like requirements are. You
gotta dig some shit up.
Yeah, like, hey, Jim Sanborn said I could dig a fucking 30-foot hole, like, right here. No.
Right.
You can't. It's
directly under your desk.
Yeah. Hey, could you stand up? I gotta dig a hole here.
It says but 30 by 30-foot hole, actually, so...
I'm going to need everyone in this building to not be in this building anymore because I'm about to take this building apart piece by piece. I guess to go back to a thing that I said, I think that my point still stands though, that like if there were a treasure here of some kind, if this were more of a true traditional treasure hunt, there still would be some value in being more explicit about that because you would put more eyes on the decryption process of your fourth panel by there being a monetary value attached to it, right? Like just inherently.
Yeah. I guess I'm not at all like convinced that there is something to be won in a monetary sense from solving this thing.
I'm not either. I'm saying like, it seems like there's like a lot of things leading to things here. And yet I feel like if you were going to do that, you should tell people that or allude to that so that people are thinking of it more like Forrest Fenn's treasure than they are thinking of it like an interesting.
Yeah, I don't think that's the intent.
Yeah.
Otherwise you wouldn't place it on, you know, like one of the most secure campuses in the world.
Right. Which again, you're limiting your options for getting a real solve here.
But at the same time, limiting it to only like those who should in theory be most qualified to solve it.
And yet 30 years out, you're looking at your watch going like, fuck, bud.
Right.
Fuck.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, man. He obviously wants people to solve it or he wouldn't be out here giving clues every couple of years. You know, like he's given us 20% of the whole solve or the final panel solve.
And he's probably walking
someone to figure it out.
Right. Right. And he's probably walking some pretty thin line at this point where it's like, I can only give so much more before it's going to be like ding obvious.
And again, this comes back to me not understanding how encryption works, but when you have that much of it, like, how is there's seemingly been no progress on that other 80%.
Right.
How is it that you can have the solution for 20% of it and not make like an inch of progress on the other 80?
Right. Right.
And again, maybe that just comes, I feel like it can't be unsolvable or reliant on like a specific key because he also wants people to solve it. Right? Like he didn't intentionally make it unsolvable. He thought people were going to figure it out relatively quickly. So it can't be something that obscure.
Particularly because he knows there's a whole nother step here.
Yeah, exactly. You still then have to put the four together and solve for whatever that is.
Like the decryption is step one.
Right.
Of a two-step process.
According to him, at least, yeah.
Right.
Which would be great if he's just fucking with people and there's really nothing there. This is just a 30-year troll of the CIA.
Oh, my God. Would there be a more just aggro troll ever?
This dude just really hates the government.
He just I'm gonna straight take
a quarter million of your dollars and piss you off for the next 3 to 4 decades.
He just straight up, like, with the fourth one, he just, like, keyboard mashed.
And the fourth one just
bump, 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 bump. All right. Well, whatever my fingers just hit, that's the letters.
The fourth one just decrypts to eat my shorts.
JKFU, eat my shorts. Bro, paid you $250,000 for this. You can't say JKFU, eat my shorts. That's fucked up.
It's a fucking YouTube link to the Rickroll video.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's the actual video ID number is just what it decrypts down to.
Right, right. But it's like the long form one with the HTTPS and shit at the beginning, so it comes out to 97 characters.
Oh, interesting. It's a website. We've got that part down. Oh, it links to a YouTube video. I wonder if this is part of the clue.
He made it before YouTube, but you know, whatever.
Never gonna give you up.
All right, buddy.
Well, God bless you, Jim. We'll keep an eye out. I hope it gets solved. I like puzzles getting solved. I'm sure as fuck not going to be the one to do it because I'm not nearly smart enough to try. But
we can barely read regular letters.
But God bless those who have the skills.
Look at you, motherfucker!
Look at you, motherfucker! And look at you, motherfucker! Hey, you. That's right, you. Listening right now, you.
Me?
You made it. You made it to the end of this day. You made it to this year. You made it to this moment, and because of that, we're proud of you. Life's not easy, okay? It's beautiful, but it's also hard, and we're proud of you.
Yeah, motherfucker.
I just wanted to agree with you, but I forgot how long that one is.
we love y'all, and we care about y'all, and we appreciate y'all for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting the show. If you want to support the show in other ways or get yourself some cool stuff, you can go to shop.whatifpodcast.com, get all kinds of swag, merch. Spencer's making up for all the buttons he didn't press while telling this story right now.
Oh, shut up, bro!
There's mugs. There's the put it on the list poster. All that stuff is at shop.whatifpodcast.com. If you want to leave us a voicemail at 612-246-4614. The email is hi@whatifpodcast.com. We read them all and we listen to them all. We just don't always respond to everything. Leave us a review on iTunes. It helps. Our Apple Podcasts, not iTunes. Show. That's not a thing anymore. I don't even hear that one. Shit's going off the rails. We love you guys. We appreciate y'all. We'll see you next week.
I'm a big kitty, dog.